The granddaddy of cyber legislation has a new heart and soul. The Federal Information Security Modernization Act is on the way to President Obama for his signature. FISMA was one of five cyber bills Congress passed in the last week. When in the latest edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook, Federal News Radio executive editor Jason Miller writes about a few of the most important changes that your agency should expect from the bounty of cyber laws. I've never heard legislation described as a bounty before.
It's a bounty.
I'm not saying it's inappropriate.
And it's the granddaddy of them all. It is bowl season, so I was getting in the spirit of bowl season.
You really are into it. So what are some of the big changes in this Rose Bowl of cyber legislation?
Well, we can start
calling that the granddaddy of all the bowl
I think that
games?
Is the granddaddy. Yeah. Well, FISMA, as we've talked about several times on your show, Francis, has been waiting, and there's been a lot of expectation and a lot of hope and desire for Congress finally to move on it and change and update it, because let's be honest, it was written a decade ago, and things have changed just
a little bit
around it. So what FISMA, the Modernization Act, does is a couple things. Continuous monitoring codifies that. We know that. Talks about risk management in a different way. But I think there's two other pieces that I think are really worth pointing out. And let me just go through them quickly. First of all, and this comes from actually Al McCole, who's a former head of DHS's Security Operations Center and is now vice president of cybersecurity at Robbins Joya. And he points to the term binding operational directive to give DHS the ability to issue compulsory directions to the agencies to take action on specific cybersecurity vulnerabilities or threats. Mm-hmm. So something happens, like what we've seen so much over the last year, the different viruses or different attacks that have come out. Mm-hmm. And DHS has had trouble kind of telling agencies what to do. They can recommend them. They can say, please, this would be a good idea. But between the OMB memo that came out about a month ago or so, and now this law, that really does give DHS a much more broader authority and a stronger, but it gives them a little bit of teeth to say, you need to do this because you're at risk. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one. I think the other piece of it is, and I think this is important, is establishing a 7-day reporting requirement in light of a cyber breach to Congress. Now, remember, OMB has a 1-day reporting to U.S. CERT. That's the DHS Computer Emergency Readiness Team. So if you find out that you have a problem, you have 1 hour, actually, to report to U.S. CERT. And Cole says, you know, sometimes that's just not enough time to really figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. But at least having a 7-day period gives you enough time to, okay, what happened? How did it happen? Here's the preliminary report. And then they have to now report it to Congress and tell them. Because what's happened time and again, I think we saw this, is breaches happen. And then no one reports about it. And then Congress goes, why weren't we notified 3-6 months later?
Yeah.
And there are reasons, you know, FBI investigations, other law enforcement investigations. But I think with, you know, Congress, they have top secret clearances. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why they can't know about it. Yeah. So he points out those two are the really biggest two changes. And there's plenty of others, but we have that linked up on federalnewsradio.com.
Yeah, it seems to me a 7-day reporting requirements reasonable to be able to say something happened. Here's the investigation that's in place, and we will report back to you as soon as the investigation's complete.
And we know that Congress does not have a good history of keeping secrets, but I think on something like this, when you say to them, we think it's still happening. If you tell us, if you let this out, the attackers will know it's happening, and therefore
and they'll know we know.
We'll know, right? And then, so I think that is something they can hold more sincere. Versus if it's 3 months later, you know, Congress is leaking that because they want to show up the agency. They want to make a so it's they're trying to establish, I think, more of a partnership, and I think that's very much key.
Two of these bills were workforce bills, and the components therein could potentially have some big impact on workforces.
And I think that's the other huge piece to this package of or bounty of legislation. I also spoke with Bob Dix. He's the Vice President of Governmental Affairs and Critical Infrastructure at Juniper Networks. He actually helped write the initial FISMA law in 2002. Mm-hmm. And he does point out these workforce bills and the importance of having a well-trained workforce. So what's key is there's two bills that really focus on the workforce. One of them gives DHS the ability to hire, to retain, to recruit, to train cybersecurity workers at the same level that the National Security Agency does. Now, former Secretary Janet Napolitano had asked for this authority back in 2012. Congress finally came through with it this year. And this is key because it gives also DHS what they call expedited hiring authority. It also gives them ability to pay them more, give them bonuses. So it opens the door through OPM regulations, of course, to do so many more things to bring in those cyber experts. And as we've written about many times and talked about on your show, DHS gets a cyber person and then they leave. Mm-hmm. And this is awful.
A lot of churn. There's five bills that the president will sign. We don't have a date for the signature yet, but we have no indication from the White House that he'll veto any of these. And what strikes me is you and I have worked together for at least 7 or 8 years.
At least, maybe 20.
It might be. And it seems like we've been talking about the idea of a comprehensive cyber bill, the right. cyber bill, for almost the entire time that you and I have worked together. So all of a sudden, just a couple of weeks ago, the White House says, well, maybe we'll go in little pieces. And now all of a sudden, here they are. It's got to be frustrating for people who have followed this and have wanted the provisions in these bills to become law and who didn't care how they became law.
And I don't want to give the full credit to the White House, who finally said, fine, no comprehensive bill, just get it done.
Right.
I want to give maybe some of that. And some of the reason is Congress finally, with all the breaches between Sony and Target and, you know, you can JP Morgan Chase and the breach after breach after breach, plus everything that's happening internally in the government, then maybe they finally got their head around it. But I think that's the uncynical side of me. The cynical side of me says, listen, Daryl Issa, the Oversight and Government Reform Committee chairman, is leaving the chairmanship in the House side. Senator Tom Carper, you know, because the Congress has switched from Democrats to Republicans in control, is now out of the chairmanship of the Senate Homeland Security Government Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. The cynical side wants to say that this was a present to those members who worked hard, who maybe were always stymied every time they tried to get something done. Mm-hmm. And it was a thank you gift versus, hey, this cyber thing's really important now, because nothing has changed between, you know, 2014 and 2013.
Right.
And even if you go all the way back to 2009, when the Obama administration came in and said, we need a comprehensive cyber bill. The only thing that's changed is things are worse, and they're worse because Congress didn't act soon enough. So I'll try to play, you know, half my cup is half full in some ways, and then other times my cup is half empty.
You are quite the diplomat, Jason Miller.
I may have a future at the State Department. You know, well, they didn't have any lights today.
There you go. Also, inside the reporter's notebook, you're writing about reverse auctions in government. This is still a challenge for agencies. Are the challenges changing, or is this the same issue that has bubbled under about reverse auctions for a time immemorial, it seems?
There was a really interesting GAO bid protest decision that came out just about a week ago, and that's why I decided to write about it now, because this is the second bid protest decision that really focused on reverse auctions and pointed out that agencies continue to struggle in using this type of procurement. Now, both of them had to do with FedBid, and let me be clear that FedBid did nothing wrong in these GAO bid protests. GAO did not stand up and say, because of FedBid, this happened. They were said they abided by the rules and the laws and all that. But what we're finding is that FedBid in too many times has been giving too much power maybe by the agencies and acting as, quote unquote, an agent of the government. And that's where I think OFPP needs to come in and say, what can agencies give up? How much responsibility and authority can they give up? Because in one of these bid protests, the most recent one, the vendor says, we got determined that we were non-responsible, meaning we had bad past performance. Mm-hmm. And when there's bad past performance rating, then that should automatically have been sent to the SBA for SBA to look at that vendor and make a decision. But because FedBid sent out that alert, the contracting officer at Interior Department, they're buying gym equipment like barbells and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They said, well, we're just not going to even look at this company called FitNet, and we'll look at the other lowest price competitor. And FitNet said, whoa, 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 you can't go on a non-responsibility determination because FedBid said something, because they got some past performance reviews that weren't good. You have to go to SBA. And GAO said, yeah, you have to go to SBA. So what's interesting about this is, this is not a FedBid issue. I'm going to say that again. This is an issue of reverse auctions and how agencies can use this tool. And let's be honest, the number of tools out there are growing. GSA has one. Another company called CompuSearch has just entered the market in reverse auctions. And I imagine there's others out there, too, that are out there to say, come use our reverse auction platform. So I'm writing here that says basically, hey, OFPP, it's time you need to act based on these GAO bid protest decisions.
Yeah, the need for guidance here is very clear, it seems, to anybody that's been paying attention to this for a while.
And I think, you know, Anne Rung came out, the OFPP administrator came out with her priorities, and she did not highlight reverse auctions per se, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is something that, as you see more bid protests come out and agencies continue to struggle a bit, that they're going to have some the OFPP is going to have to take a closer look at this.
Yeah, it seems she didn't mention it specifically, but you could read between the lines, maybe, of a couple of the priorities that she talked
it's
about.
It's in the hallways, the category management. All right. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big piece of that.
All right. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller, Inside the Reporter's Notebook. The whole thing's up on federalnewsradio.com, my friend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.